Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg. With Astine Jacobson, who has a number of titles at Saxo Bank of Copenhagen. He's out of economics, Copenhagen University. But Steen, what is so important with your August position, chief economist and all that, is you have a trading experience to die for. And this was, of course, at Chase Manhattan. This is, folks, when it was Chase Manhattan Proprietary Trading Group, Swiss Bank Corp. These are names from the past, Steen, but you have been on a desk. How does a trading experienced, grizzled guy like you look at Bitcoin? Do you trust the bid and trust the ask, given the years and years you've had of enjoying losing money?
Absolutely not. I must say, I'm just back from pretty much a world tour, and as soon as my presentation is over, the first question is about cryptocurrency, the second, the third, the fourth, and the fifth is also about cryptocurrency. So, you know, you made me sound very old, which of course I am, but now I'm actually my most recent high is a 22-year-old crypto analyst. So it's very much become part of my everyday. And I have to say, the crypto analyst I hired, who is 22, and me, we sit at exactly opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of how exciting all this is. For me, this is a very sophisticated computer game that is running out of steam as soon as we see, as we saw today, the confirmation of CME, CBOE, and other exchanges is going to make it liquid. Because we know in history, when we actually have a proper, and that is the essence of your question, when we have a proper bid and a proper offer, when we have the ability to trade the both side of the trade, then the market becomes a totally different animal. In other words, right. I think the institutionalization of the CME and CBO actually becoming a transparent market will make this market grow, whether it then continues to go either to 25,000 or 5,000 or 1,000. Of course, it will be dependent on how good they are becoming a real currency.
With the heritage of the Baltic Sea and the mathematics of Leuven, and I don't know where the first trade was made in Copenhagen. Maybe it was out in the harbor with a mermaid. There's the buttonwood tree and the rest of it. Where do the markets meet on Bitcoin? Do you have any belief in the bid-ask process of Bitcoin being a market transparent process?
Not at all. And we see daily stories that circulate certainly on Twitter and other social media platforms that people have been trying to hit the bid, and they've gone from being up 100,000 to being down minus 30, because as you say, what we're dealing with mathematically, which Swiss Bank O'Connor told me a long time ago, is the fat tail. And in the fat tail, the essential problem is that we have what we call discontinuity. And discontinuity means basically you cannot expect the price to be 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 4. What you have is the price is 100, is 100, and then it's 50, and then it's 60, and then it's 120. So you have a pricing model that looks very, very different. It doesn't mean the market doesn't have liquidity, but it only has pockets of liquidity. So you're absolutely right in saying that. And I will say, for the business we do, mainly in exchange-traded products on this. This is exchange-traded notes, which we facilitate. A lot of people are trading it, but it's really with the 1% of the capital trying it out. How do we do this? How does it work? So far, and over the last couple of days, few people got burned. But overall, of course, as long as we have the trajectory higher today, 10,455, as we talk, of course, people think this is a money machine. But I have noticed my email box is starting to fill up with people saying I can make 100% in a week.
Steen, I want to just follow up on this idea of what's real and what's not, because Tesla comes to mind when I think of a company that's not making any money but has a valuation that's greater than many of its peers, like Ford, for example. And I wonder if you could just dive a little bit deeper into this whole world of electric vehicles and what it takes to power them and an investment opportunity. This is all about lithium batteries, at least at the moment.
Certainly, if not lithium in the future, then certainly batteries. What I've been arguing and saying is that when you have one single political power like China wanting to deal with this number one social issue, pollution, through electrification of cars, and in the process saying by 2030 all cars has to be electrified, you have a magnitude of new release CABICs and research and development we've never seen. Volkswagen of Germany has committed over 20 billion. They've committed 25 billion to driverless cars in the space of the last 6 months. We see across the board the money is being thrown at it at a rate we have not seen. I mean, if there's one thing lagging from this beautiful stock market we've seen over the last 10 years, it is exactly that the companies, to some extent, have stopped doing CAPEX and taking the CAPEX expenditure down to the bottom line, improving margin. What we see now, in my opinion, in the next 10 years, and even most dominantly in the next 2 years, is that everybody's going to move to electric cars.
Steen, this has been brilliant. We've got to get you on again soon, particularly in our London offices. Mr. Jacobson is with Saxo Bank. This is Bloomberg.
We're back with Joseph Stiglitz of Columbia University. In January, Professor Stiglitz said this. So let's bring in that quote board. I believe very strongly that countries like the United States could and should move to a digital currency. Professor, were you talking about Bitcoin then?
No, I was not. I was talking about actually extending the systems that we already have, like MasterCard, Visa. Let's make the whole system into one in which we use digital currency. It's not Bitcoin. It's a basically U.S. dollar based in the United States, in Europe, a euro and the pound, but it's using electronics rather than paper. You know, paper is so 19th and 20th century,
but Professor,
21st century. Why are we using paper? That was the question I was asking.
But if Professor, if Bitcoin were to be regulated, could it be viable?
One of the main functions of government is to create currency. And Bitcoin is successful only because of its potential for circumvention, lack of oversight. So it seems to me it ought to be outlawed. It doesn't serve any socially useful function. We ought to just go back to what we always have had, and this is just a bubble, as several of your commentators have already pointed out. It's a bubble that's going to give a lot of people a lot of exciting times as it rises up and then goes down. But what I was talking about is the medium of exchange that we use for transaction. And what I was trying to say is, let's move away from paper into the 21st century of a digital economy.
This is away from your Nobel Prize, and it's away from your acclaim in economics, but I'm going to go there anyways. Charles Mackay, 1841, talks about our peculiar follies in the behavioral component that makes for these bubbles, whether it's 1637 and tulip bulbs, 1840 rose. Bring up the chart here. Here's the bubble in the making. This is log Bitcoin. I can't stand the arithmetic charts. And this is all you need to know. This is massive convexity. I haven't seen that chart since the tulip bulbs when we were doing surveillance by semaphore. Professor Stiglitz, they're relying on a Marxist theory of value. They're going back to middle Marx and looking at the value of exchange. It's smoke and mirrors, isn't it?
Precisely.
Thank you. Why?
Well, the value of a Bitcoin today is expectations of what the Bitcoin is going to be tomorrow. If the government says, look at the reason Bitcoin is being used is the circumvention, they could close it down at any moment and then it collapses.
We got to get you back here. I would love to have you join our London set with Francine to talk about Brexit, some of that politics, and also talk to you about the underlying value of exchange of Bitcoin. He is a laureate from Columbia. Two books in one. There they are. The classic, Globalization is Discontent, and the Euro as well, from Joe Stiglitz as well. We'll be right back. you're going to get to another important conversation, ripping up the script on this truly historic announcement on Bitcoin, where CME and CBOE have chosen to set up markets on Bitcoin. That is a big deal. Bitcoin higher. We'll get to that quote in a moment. First, our economic indicators, and they are always brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network, the broker-dealer RIA that's been putting relationships first since 1979, found out why the industry's most satisfied advisors. They are head over heels about Commonwealth Financial Network. Visit Commonwealth.com. So we've had a Jim McCaughan, Cambridge Mathematics Principal Group. He was brilliant on the gyrations, if you will, as the news broke. And then we got lucky with Steen Jacobsen, exceptionally experienced trader and now chief economist with Saxo Bank so much. And now we go to the gentleman who fractured mathematics like I did when he was at California, Santa Barbara. Chris Ailman joins us right now with the California State Teachers Retirement System. You're on a whole nother spectrum from some of our other mathy guests. Is Bitcoin, I'm sure, is tangential for you. But nevertheless, you got to think about it.
Oh, absolutely.
How many assets do you have? Are you under like 17 trillion?
220 billion.
Okay, that's a little smaller than 17 trillion. But you're running this aircraft carrier through the water. Do you care about the little PT boat?
We do. Well, Bitcoin, because it is a market, it's interesting. I actually don't believe it's institutional yet. The news today is another step along that way. But I've said, Tom, you know, there's tangible and intangible investments, and Bitcoin is the ultimate intangible investment. It represents nothing other than what somebody else will pay for it. It's air. It's invisible. The fact that it has a market, that's good. If anything, in our world, it's going to probably represent an alternative currency. It's not a yen. It's not a pound. It's not the dollar.
I'm going to get upset here. I did this with Mel Pass yesterday at the Council on Foreign Relations. David wants dependable currencies. It's not a, come on, Chris, with that vol up or down, it's not a currency.
It would, what I said was an alternative. In other words, if you're managing your currency portfolio and hedging it and you don't like pounds or dollars or yen or euros, it then becomes another alternative of almost being out. It's the cash equivalent maybe of the asset allocation. We're not going to be using it. I'm going to be studying it, but I bet it's going to be 5 to 10 years before it becomes institutional.
Do you ever feel that that it's a generational experiment, that people under the age of 30? I mean, we were just hearing from Steen Jacobsen saying that he's got a 22-year-old analyst who's following Bitcoin for him, and that they are at opposite ends when they look at the efficacy and the legitimacy of Bitcoin.
Oh, absolutely. You can cut it. Basically, I'll divide our audience. 1965 and before. Don't really get Bitcoin. Very few of them trade it. After that, Gen X a little bit, and the millennials absolutely just think it's the coolest thing. But they also put their entire lives out on the web and trust things implicitly. And again, this is a digital entity that has no underlying value underneath it. It is an invisible product. And I think there's a generational divide between people who want things that have some underlying, even a stock, which is digital, has an underlying ownership slice of a company.
Right. But I'm glad you mentioned stocks, because this also makes me think of Amazon, right? And I think of the Amazon Alexa Echoes that are appearing in people's homes, and how if I had described to you 5, 10 years ago that this would be the way that you would interact with your retailer, I don't think many people would say, oh, yeah, I'll just say what I want and it will just magically appear at my door.
No, there's going to be disruption. There's no regulations on Bitcoin. So just like with Amazon and Echo and all the different products, you're going to see proliferations. You're going to see growth. But I think you're also going to have some ups and downs of disruptions. As Tom said, volatility is going to be the code word, because there's no rules and regulations to follow these things.
Yeah, but don't people counter that with saying that, gee, you know, I lived through the 2007-2008 decline in stock prices, and I'm still recovering from that, so I don't have a lot of faith in the stock market. what's the difference between that and Bitcoin? It's just about what someone else is willing to pay me.
Well, I'd argue that if you invested in 08, if you stayed invested like we have, you've already recovered and you own something that actually has some underlying asset value. There's a book value to those equities that you hold. There's no book value underlying of a Bitcoin. Doesn't mean it needs to go away. But, you know, who wants to trade a product that is primarily used by North Korea and unknown people? Its underlying value is
people
that it's
in
anonymous.
China?
It's the only value it has is that it's anonymous. And obviously, that's being proven to be wrong.
When you were at Santa Barbara, did you get to see Dishwalla before they became famous?
I did not, Tom. But you're right. A lot of good things have come out of Santa Barbara and continue to this day. It is a popular place.
The single
place.
Counting blue cars came out of nowhere. And everyone was like, who are these people? I mean, it was magical. Bitcoin has come out of nowhere. I haven't had a constructive interview this week, Pim, with somebody over 25. Is there anybody you know of our vintage that knows who Dishwalla is that actually thinks Bitcoin's for real?
That hurts. That hurts. No constructive interviews.
Seriously,
I'm not sure that that there are. I think you've heard from very knowledgeable people, Jamie Dimon, quite a few others that have spoken out very strongly about Bitcoin. It will be around for a long time. A number of the cryptocurrencies will.
Let me do this. Chris Ailman with California State Teachers Retirement System. And the headline, this is like in a million, I've been here for like 112 years, Michael, right? This headline, U.S. regulators to allow Bitcoin futures at the CME and the CBOE. Hold on to my wallet.
Well, let's get back to Ann Richards, CEO of M&G Investments, who manages over £280 billion in assets, and Robert Niblett, he's director of Chatham House. So, Ann, first of all, what is Bitcoin? I mean, can you afford to sit it out, or do you need to be in but stay skeptical?
Look, there are people that use Bitcoin for all sorts of different reasons. I mean, I tend to agree, as you've just seen from the price moves, that you can't say this is a store of value when the value moves around as much as it does. It's clear that there are reasons why some people may choose to use a peer-to-peer currency or exchange, which is effectively what you're talking about in Bitcoin. There might be legitimate reasons for that, because you want to have transactions away from prying government eyes. There might be illegitimate reasons why you might want to do that, to keep transactions away from prying tax authorities. But what it is not is something that you can use in replace of a dollar or sterling or euro, because it does not have the underpinning and the backing of government oversight or issuance. I think some of that, certainly on the oversight, will come because it has to come. But that shouldn't take away from the fact that the underlying technology, the distributed ledger technology,
the blockchain
that sits underneath it, is a really powerful technology. And people have, in the last 2 or 3 years, have been starting to develop that distributed ledger technology for other purposes and other applications. And that is immensely powerful. But what's going on in the pricing of Bitcoin is definitely mania, in my mind right now.
Do you think it'll be regulated? And if it does get regulated, can it actually come back as an asset that you would look at?
Well, I think it's possible that if you go way down the line, that it's possible that might be something that you trade. But it's not it's an instrument. It's not an asset. I think that's the way to look at it. So it's an instrument in the way that we now trade in other non-underpinned assets and sorts of derivatives that you have. But you know, volatility would be one example. You can trade volatility. There's not an underlying asset to volatility itself. So I think, yes, as a traded instrument, it is possible it will mature enough to be something that we can use. But we're way away from that. We're years away from that. What is clear, though, is that regulation, I think, at some stage must come to this market, because people need to be protected. There's lots of people playing in this space who don't know what they're doing.
Let's zoom in on the chart here if we have Bitcoin. We showed it yesterday. This is the intraday chart. It's really, you know, there's like 8 ways to look at this chart on a log basis. Up we go with the surge here. You really don't get the moonshot feel of Bitcoin. What you do get is this huge volatility yesterday, and then the churn and this recent little move here. What I would suggest is you got a vector like this, and we'll really have to see if Bitcoin can find a bidder. I love what Dennis Gartman said, taking a direct shot at Bloomberg surveillance, Bitcoin this and Bitcoin that. Dennis, if you're watching, yes, we're doing more Bitcoin this and Bitcoin that. Ann Richards, if Bitcoin's out there, and Robin Niblett, let me go to you on this. The focus seems to be on the excesses of Bitcoin in China. Can that be a set of financial instability for the Chinese leadership?
Well, you're getting a little bit beyond my ken here. I mean, my instinct would be to say that part of this rise of Bitcoin is to do with the fact that we have some large anti-corruption drives taking place in key markets across the world. China's been going on for a while, but you've got Saudi Arabia as well now. Who knows what might come in some of these other, as we discussed earlier, kind of very tightly controlled governments. So people are looking, as Anne was saying, for a place to hide money, to be frank, more than anything else. So I'm just wondering how much of this in my world, how much of my world is spilling over into the Bitcoin space. If it is, from a Chinese government standpoint, having pretty much imposed some control on the shadow banking side that had really got a little bit out of control, it'll worry them that a new risk has come along that they're now also going to have to tame.
This goes to my book of the year last year, Ken Rogoff's A Curse of Cash, Robin, and the idea of Sweden leading the way and maybe India with their courage dealing with it as well. Is there going to be a curse of Bitcoin? Do you just assume that if it's the new cash alternative, at some point Bitcoin collapses as an almost barter medium?
For my taste, it feels more like barter medium. I'm still a big believer, however weak governments are around the world, they're the best thing you've got in terms of preserving order. And whether that order is applied to international alliances or to markets or to money, people are still looking for some ultimate authority. And the only one that exists right now are national governments.
Very good. Well, the curse of Bitcoin, maybe that's what we'll call it. Robin Niblett with us and Ann Richards. Pim, I want to get to this because there's so much to talk about with Jim McCone this morning. Jim, John Cryan, Deutsche Bank, James Gorman, Morgan Stanley, Ann Richards, we spoke to earlier this morning at M&G. You're all mathematically based. Do you have a confidence that our fixed income markets can unwind into QT with mathematical stability over the next 2 to 5 years?
Tom, I have confidence but not certainty. So far, the Fed has judged it very well. They went through a lengthy period of not replacing replacing the bonds. Now they're not replacing them. They're running down the balance sheet. I think that's eminently possible within the market structure, within the flow of funds. Essentially, what the Fed has done is move from a very accommodative monetary policy with QE through a neutral one to now a slight tightening by reducing the balance sheet. And I think that goes with a modest interest rate increase. Now, they've got to keep it stable, but then Mr. Powell, as chair, is a continuity candidate. So I'm fairly confident they'll keep it stable. Without certainty, they will.
Sounded like the gentleman from Cambridge. You're using there the calculus of through, the calculus of the word slight. These are all gentle, gradual, vector-driven ideas. You and I know there can be exogenous shocks. Mm-hmm. What's the exogenous shock that could upset the apple cart for Governor Carney, Chairman Powell, and all those remaining, including Mr. Draghi?
Well, for Governor Carney and for Mr. Draghi, it would be the impact of a hard Brexit. And I think the news on Bloomberg today about banks having to repaper contracts is a very good example of the sort of disruption that could inhibit credit creation in Europe. That would be a nasty shock coming from within the monetary system and one that hasn't been focused on yet. There are lots of these events that could, with a fairly low probability of a serious adverse effect. So far, we're managing to shimmy around them and not to have any of them really hit the economy. But that's what I'm concerned about. I think it's basically a good environment, but I am more worried about negative tail risk than usual.
Jim, maybe you could just focus a little bit on small and mid-cap stocks, because they have lagged the overall market, whether you're talking about the S&P 500. And I'd like to get your thoughts on whether you think that that is an opportunity for investors.
Yeah, I think that the U.S. private sector has prospered and will continue to prosper in spite of Washington. I think there's a lot of innovation. I think there's some deregulation. If tax changes go through, it'll be good for the U.S. Private sector. So I would be a supporter of buying small and mid-cap stocks in the U.S., not so much because they're small, but because they're largely domestic. And I think that is a good place to be relative to other markets.
Will that also indicate your view on the U.S. dollar? I mean, if they're domestically oriented, that means they're insulated from any swings in currency.
Yeah, I think that's right. The dollar, I suspect, is going a little bit stronger over the next year or two. If one of these negative tail risks happened, the dollar would go a lot stronger. But I think most likely the dollar will have a fairly firm undertone. That's not necessarily great for global companies. It's probably better for the domestics.
Well, let me just ask you a little bit more about this call. The dollar getting stronger. You really believe that, for example, I would imagine President Donald Trump, real estate expert as he is, would be in favor of either stable or lower interest rates. Am I missing something?
Yeah, he is. But, you know, you're at a point where Fed policy points to higher short-term rates, and that will affect the dollar. I think it's the nearest thing to a certainty in the markets that they're going to do a 25 basis point increase at their December meeting. I think the consensus is sort of 90%+ that they'll do that.
Well, just curious, what's your thought then on what's the percentage of your analysis of an inverted yield curve? Do you think
I think an inverted yield curve could eventually happen, but I think what's going to happen in the next 12 months is that the short rates will go up, but not as much as the Fed's dot plot, and that you'll see some yield curve flattening. I think that's where it goes over the next year or two.
Pim, hold Jim McCaughan's hand. With us, Jim McCaughan, mathematician and chief executive officer and Forrester Principal Group. Here is the headline. It's 7:59 a.m. Would you hold his hand, please? He's going to need to be medicated, Pim. U.S. regulators to allow Bitcoin futures to trade on CME and CBOE. We now rip up the show here to talk to Jim about auction theory. Okay, mm-hmm. It's a bloody clash your junior year on auction theory. You got a bid and an ask. You got no depth in the market. You got a mystery to who's who. You got massive illiquidity. You've got no data stability, tick to tick. And these guys are going to do futures on that auction process?
Can you tell what Tom's view on this is?
I think I've got a good guess.
How can we set up a regulatory structure around a mystery of bid-ask process? We're not doing futures on Procter & Gamble.
And this is a derivative, which means that the regulatory structure isn't reaching into the cash market, which is probably just as well because they couldn't have transparency into the cash market. I think the problem with Bitcoin is, you know, even precious metals have some sort of intrinsic value because they look good. Bitcoin has no intrinsic value, which means it could go down 100%, it could go up 100% easily.
But you and I know that, let's take the gloom case, if something goes down, everybody looks at, oh my word, they're selling it. Mm-hmm. And you and I know the type 2 construct is not the ask. When it goes down, there's no one there on the bid.
Yeah.
And then these derivative regulatory bodies, CME, CBOE, they have to deal with that, the vacuum.
Yeah. So what the regulators need to do with any players that are actually trading this future is make sure they're not exposed either way on it, because the volatility will remain very high. From a regulatory point of view, I think that's about all you can do, because this is no better than betting on the horses. It's a pure total bet.
Okay, and with that accent, saying betting on the horses works great. But Jim McCaughan, what is absolutely critical here is you and I know this can be a correct, responsible hedge vehicle. I get that. Mm-hmm. By definition, you need to have speculation on the other side.
You do.
What do you predict of speculation and that emotion of leverage as you're successful for a set number of units?
I think the problem with this market will be that events will drive it. And remember, it's not many years ago, Mt. Gox, the exchange, went under. Bitcoins disappeared. Investor value was obliterated. That could happen again. You know, there are unregulated exchanges in all kinds of jurisdictions that are trading these bitcoins. There's all kinds of trading going on, which is confidential and totally untransparent. That's what you're betting on. So I think anyone who gets involved in this has to be prepared to lose all their money.
Well, the term, and this is a quote, the term that it's being used to describe the process by which this is coming to market is called self-certification.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of self-certification?
Not exactly, no. I think I know what it sounds like. It sounds like caveat emptor.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is this, though, the kind of event, for example, if you go to Coinbase or you go to some of these sites and they lock up for whatever reason, is that the kind of event that then gets everybody, you know, saying, let's just get out, I want to go to cash?
That could happen. That could happen. But I think it's likely to be something worse than a temporary lockup in a trading site.
You know, we're doing Bloomberg Radio 25-year anniversary. To me, Pim, this is a really important point. Mm-hmm. You and I remember when CBOE was, who are those guys?
Yep.
Options? Really? I mean, Pim, we're developing a new, would you, within derivative math, very quickly here, Jim McConnell, would you call this a synthetic instrument? There's no tangible.
No,
what's the tangible?
It's a derivative on a synthetic instrument, so there is nothing tangible. Here's, I think, the way that Bitcoin could attain an economic value if it was used as a medium of exchange. But it's not happening. It's actually going into reverse. Many of the Bitcoins in circulation are actually going into funds. So they're being used less.
We are so fortunate you're with us today on this announcement. Jim McConn with us from Principal Group on CME and CBOE, looking at Bitcoin. We are honored always at Bloomberg Surveillance over the acuity and the distinctions and the differences of our guests. Today's been no difference. And now for another twisted look. She holds an electrical engineering degree from Caltech and showed out a shingo at Harvard University and Stanford for a bit. Elaine Oh joins us. She writes for Bloomberg View. Elaine, what was it like the day you got your acceptance letter from Caltech?
Oh, that was a really long time ago. But, I mean, I always knew I wanted to go there because, I'd been interested in tech and computers since I was a kid.
You come from the tech side of this arch debate on Bitcoin as someone of prodigious academics in engineering and operation systems. How do you respond to economists, for example, Joseph Stiglitz, the laureate, saying Bitcoin should be outlawed?
Well, I mean, it's a really silly thing to say that Bitcoin should be outlawed because it can't be outlawed. It's not controlled by anyone. There's no command center. I mean, this is something that's being run in countries all around the world on like tens of thousands of machines. So, he can say that, but it's just silly.
Well, Elaine, if it's silly, I mean, I'm wondering, for example, can you log on to Facebook in China?
You'd have to go through a VPN. I mean, there are ways to log on to Facebook in China, but it's not accessible to
I raise that specific example just because you say that it can't be outlawed. What if, let's say, the Chinese government were to see Bitcoin as a threat to the stability of the financial system and they outlawed people's ability to invest in it?
I think, that's actually a very real threat right now. China has, the central bank or the People's Bank has made insinuations that they plan to do some sort of deep pack inspection to filter out Bitcoin-related traffic. But I think that users will find a way around that if they truly want to use Bitcoin.
You are a blockchain engineer. Do you care about the price of Bitcoin?
Only in as far as a lot of my clients pay me in Bitcoin, but for the most part, I mean, not really, but the technology is sound and it will continue to be for many years.
Can we then partition all the price blah, blah, blah from your engineering work, or on a Venn diagram, are they overlapping?
Not. I mean, the price doesn't have a lot to do with the underlying technology. I mean, right now, Bitcoin's number one use case is speculation, which is not really what it was intended for. It was, but that's just a side effect.
Is its number two use corruption and black market crime?
I wouldn't say that. From my experience, the number two use is just to make international payments, because it's not always easy to or cost effective to go through a bank that needs to then go through a corresponding bank to make an international transfer.
Elaine, you wrote back in June a really great piece for Bloomberg, and it has to do with the blockchain bubble. You said that it might be a desirable thing having to do with the sale of digital tokens. I wonder if you could explain that.
Oh, well, so this is sort of separate from Bitcoin, but people have been trying, or I guess a lot of startups and entrepreneurs are raising money by selling digital tokens. And most of the people who are buying these tokens will see their investments vaporize. But at the same time, I mean, it's always been really hard for people who are developing open source software to find sources of funding. And the bubble, I mean, might not result in returns for the investors, but I think this is finally a good way for software developers to find independent sources of funding.
What is your best outcome? I mean, you know, almost within an engineering standpoint, what is your best outcome for all the froth and uproar over the price ascent of Bitcoin? What would you like to have happen if we see it? In an arithmetic space, it's a hyperbola. It's not there yet in a log y-axis where it's simply convex. Do you want it to go higher? Do you want stability? Or do you want it to retreat to some level that's optimal for you?
I'd actually prefer to see the price go lower. Right now, Bitcoin transactions, every Bitcoin transaction costs a certain amount of money that's denominated in Bitcoin. And the higher the price of Bitcoin, the more expensive it is to make a payment using Bitcoin. So I would prefer to see the price quite a bit lower just to make it so payments aren't as expensive as they seem.
Elaine, thank you so much. She writes for Bloomberg View and, of course, with her work within blockchain and with the more technological end of Bitcoin. She's with Global Financial Access as well, but writing for Bloomberg View. Thrilled to have Elaine on with us today. Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Subscribe and listen to interviews on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. I'm on Twitter at Tom Keen. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide on Bloomberg Radio.